From the land to Grand Teton University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 31st day of August, 2026. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Joe Jansen. He is in Columbia on sabbatical, but looking at the expanding marketplace there for both corn. It is the number three corn importer from the United States, and of soybean meal. If you've been wondering where all of that's been headed out of the U.S., a good deal of it's going to Colombia. We'll talk with Joe about Colombia's experience, the trade deal that put it into play, and then we'll discuss what producers might do about grain sales and marketing for this fall as well. We'll turn our attention to the weather as we wrap up, but not the forecast, rather the extraordinary number of tornadoes Illinois has suffered this calendar year. And along the way today, we'll take a look at how cash basis has changed over the last month throughout the Corn Belt right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn for the day settled at $5.15, up three. December 5.37¾, a penny and a quarter higher, and the March contract up one. $5.52¼, the settlement price. November beans unchanged. $12.88 for the day. January at $13.03¼, a half higher. Bean meal futures down $3.60. The bean oil futures 9 cents lower. Wheat futures for the soft red December, a dime lower at $7.74 a bushel. And the hard red December at $8.38, down 6¼ cents. Live cattle futures up 95 cents. Feeders 50 cents higher. And lean hogs $1.77½ higher. Crude oil at $85.74 a barrel, up $2.34. Joe Jansen, agricultural economist with the Farm Dog team on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, now joins us from Columbia, the nation. Hi, Joe. You're on sabbatical this year. Thank you for taking time with me today and agreeing to joining us to talk every month about the marketplace while you're on sabbatical. First, for those who don't know what a sabbatical is, can you explain it?
Yeah. So one of the things, and I think everyone would say, you know, the job of a university professor is unique. And one of the unique aspects is that, you know, we're tasked with sort of keeping our knowledge about the world up to date. And one of the ways that we can do that is to take some time away from the university to go somewhere else and learn something. So I'm spending this academic year in Bogota, Colombia. And you might say, well, why go there? And for, you know, my research program is as someone really interested in corn and soybean markets in the global commodity trading world. This is really kind of an excellent place. Not a lot of people know that Colombia is one of our biggest trading partners with the United States when it comes to corn, soybean meal, a lot of feed grains. So this is a great place to learn about sort of like what is when we talk about export demand for U.S. ag commodities, what does that look like? And so that's what I'm going to be spending this year doing here in Colombia.
So I assume you're going to try to figure out, one, how it went from a developing market to an expanding market, I think, over the last decade. It is, what, the number three export destination for corn from the United States?
Yeah, no, you know, in any given year, number three or number four, it's right there with South Korea. So Mexico, obviously, our biggest trading partner for corn, Japan, and then South Korea and Colombia. And it's really a fascinating story. It kind of harkens us back to an earlier era of ag trade. The reason why we are sending so much corn and so much soybean meal to Colombia really has to do with a free trade agreement that was signed back in 2010 that really didn't fully come into force until about the last 5 years or so, but has provided duty-free access to the Colombian market for U.S. corn. And that's been a major success story. And we talk about, you know, why did we have, you know, really strong corn exports last year? Well, it's the kind of market development work that was done, I think, in a little bit of a different era, a maybe slightly less antagonistic era of ag trade discussions, but one that really opened up this market here in Colombia to U.S. corn and U.S. soybean meal. And that's been, you know, one of the things that you sort of realize is that, you know, we sign these agreements not necessarily knowing what are the market conditions under which they're going to sort of play out. But one of the things that we've needed, right, is a big market for U.S. soybean meal. We've had this boom in the use of soybean oil for biofuels. We've got all this meal. What do we do with it? Well, one of the things we've done is started to really ramp up exports of soybean meal, and Colombia is one of the markets that's soaked up some of that demand.
So this is an expanding marketplace. You're there to learn, I suppose, both about how it developed, which you just kind of explained, and what the potential is.
Yeah.
But it is a different tact that is than what is currently being taken, which is short-term and very fast agreements that sometimes and most times expire. This one was put in place, didn't really pay off until the last, 5 years or so.
Yeah, that's right. So a free trade agreement signed in 2010, and you know, when a country sort of gives up some degree of, you know, market access, oftentimes they don't want to do that overnight. They don't want to, and that's sort of one of the reasons why the trade negotiations that we have right now are so hard, because everyone wants everything right away. This was not the case in the free trade agreement that the United States signed with Colombia. It took 12 years to fully phase the agreement in to get full tariff-free access to the Colombian market. But it really has paid off. I mean, the United States sent almost $2 billion worth of corn to Colombia last year. That's a big deal.
Are they feeding animals for domestic consumption or for domestic consumption and export both?
Most of the livestock is going to be consumed here in Colombia. There's a bit of a regional market where they're shipping meat to other countries nearby. But it really is mainly a domestic market that is, you know, growing over time.
And is the bean meal mostly for the livestock, or are they processing that?
Same thing. It's a lot of poultry demand, kind of similar to what it would be here in the United States.
Okay, now let's turn your attention to what you think you might be studying as the expansion part of it. What does that look like, or what are you exploring?
Well, we really want to understand, you know, especially what are the, you know, we know that, you know, countries are going to be in the market for U.S. ag commodities, but really, on a higher frequency basis, like when we're thinking about right now, you know, we've seen a big run up in corn and soybean prices. And I think one of the questions would be, does that kind of, you know, destroy some of the demand that might have existed at lower price levels? And so we want to sort of, what I want to do in my own research is more closely understand how do importers react when they see rising prices. We have seen, you know, really strong export sales, say for soybeans, in the last few weeks. But at some point, a high price means those importers back out of the market and say, you know, this is too much. And so really understanding that reaction function, and then how does that translate into price action that we see that's really, you know, relevant on the ground for producers in a place like Illinois.
On that note, many will have been saying on the air with us that the reason these exports, particularly to China, are taking place is political, and they're willing to buy political capital in order to negotiate with President Trump. Does that can you suss that out so that you understand what's really happening to these export markets?
You know, that's something I think we're going to be able to hopefully shed some light on, both because we have a really, you know, detailed export sales data system in the United States, and because, you know, I'm also going to try and match that up with the data that exists on trade flows coming into a country like Colombia. That's kind of why I'm on the ground here, to try and understand that. But you're right, that does make it much more complicated when the motives that buyers have are really, you know, what we economists would call heterogeneous, or, you know, really different across maybe export destinations.
So I was wondering, quite frankly, whether, because you're on sabbatical and the things that you are studying, whether you would be in the daily markets, but you certainly have to be. So I do have some questions for you as it's related to the current markets.
Yeah.
And how producers in Illinois and across the United States ought to think about them. I want to give you some background, at least, so that you know where we've been at on the air in July, on that July 4th weekend, when things, for me personally, changed because of the Russia-Ukraine, we're going to attack each other's ports function, and it was clear that that was going to escalate, and that the United States-Iran war also was going to not end, and the MOU was not going to be good anymore, because things were escalating there, and it looked as if, and still looks as if, that's going to not be settled anytime soon. And then there's this SRE function that's taking place. How do you put all of those together with the rally that we've had and what producers need to think about for corn and soybean marketing?
Yeah, I think, you know, you could, I certainly look at this as, you know, a lot of the, like, the fundamental factors that you've talked about. I think all, well, other than the SREs, but certainly the geopolitical stuff and the weather that we've seen in the U.S. Midwest, which is, you know, obviously the most sort of biggest weather story from a global crop perspective right now. Those things really moving prices higher. And I think that maybe presents an opportunity to the grower. You know, we're going to be moving into harvest here. And I think the one thing I'm sort of thinking about is just on that weather story, still maybe a lot more uncertainty about U.S. crop yields right now than maybe we might be used to at a time when we're, you know, right on the cusp of harvest. So I think there's a lot of maybe potential risk there. And the market is sort of presenting an opportunity for some degree of sales. Obviously, we're going to think about, I mean, I've got some work thinking about just sort of like, what does that harvest time price dip look like, and how might that affect, you know, producer marketing? We don't want to put ourselves in a situation where we've got to move a lot of grain in a short amount of time. So kind of giving, you know, from the producer's perspective, I think a lot of those stories are maybe priced into the market to some degree. If there is some resolution on any of them, whether that's, you know, maybe yields aren't quite as bad in the Corn Belt as one might think, if sort of some of the geopolitical tension is maybe tamped down in the run up to a midterm election, there are some, you know, reasons why you don't want to sort of paint yourself into a corner from a grain marketing perspective.
So you are wait and see for what, a week, or your market what I need to use to pay things off, or I don't. Where do you stand?
You want to give, you want to really pin me down here, don't you, Todd?
A little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you want to have, I mean, these current price levels, a bean price now on the board that's approaching towards $13, you know, corn prices well in the fives are levels that should engender some profitability for most operations. So I think we don't want to go into a situation where we've got a ton of unpriced grain coming off the combine in a situation where we don't have a clear plan for when that grain is going to get delivered. That doesn't mean we need to move it all off the combine. And that's my comments on sort of marketing into a harvest low are with that in mind. But at the same time, delivering grain at harvest, in many cases can be some of the most profitable sales of the year, particularly in a time when the market is saying, you know, we do really want to pull grain into the supply chain. We do think the U.S. crop is a little bit tight. So I would want to have moved, significant share, and what significant means to different operations is a different thing. But having some sales where, you know, that grain is delivered and we're generating cash flow in the 1 to 3 month time horizon, as opposed to the 3 to 9 month.
This is where knowing total cost of storage, whether it's on the farm or at the elevator, really makes a difference, and including the interest on the cash that's not in the bank.
That's absolutely right. You really want to think about, you know, sharpen your pencil from a profitability calculation standpoint when we're thinking about deferring sales into a new calendar year. Obviously, there's a lot of uncertainty in our markets that we have right now, but opportunity is coming with that uncertainty. If you can, you know, looking at sort of, you know, what the market is offering from a, you know, sales at harvest versus sales into the new year. I know there's some pretty significant spreads between that December and March futures contract, particularly for corn, that might sort of make it pretty profitable, but producers have to really understand their cost of storage and what they're giving up by holding grain into a new marketing year.
Thank you very much, Joe.
Thank you, Todd.
Joe Jansen is an agricultural economist at the University of Illinois, a member of the FarmDoc team, and joined us from Bogota, Colombia, where he's taking sabbatical this year to study the development and expansion of marketplaces like Colombia that has been importing both corn and soybean meal at record paces over the last few years. Up next, you know very well that basis, or the cash price, spot price of corn, soybeans, other commodities can be very different than what is portrayed at the futures market. Over the past month, corn basis to September futures fell by as much as 27 cents per bushel across the eastern Corn Belt, with only gains limited to about 5 cents. Soybean basis movement was more variable. Losses reached 24 cents a bushel, while gains were as high as 20 cents. Josh Strine, who is a graduate research assistant in agricultural economics at Purdue University, says the corn basis took a hit.
Corn basis weakened in 30 of 41 crop reporting districts between the third week of July and the third week of August. While the region-wide weakening broke the trend of gains that had built through summer, it aligned with historical season patterns. Basis weakened the most in southeast Indiana, where it fell by 27 cents per bushel to reach negative 32 cents. That is the weakest basis in the district for this time of year since the 2009-2010 crop year. Sharp declines extended across the southern parts of Indiana, Illinois, and Ohio, consistent with the 20 cent per bushel decrease in basis along the Ohio River. Ohio's picture was more mixed. Central Ohio weakened just 3 cents to positive 17 cents, sitting 17 cents above its 3-year historical average. However, East Central Ohio fell by 22 cents over the past month to negative 16 cents, now 30 cents below its historical average.
By the way, Iowa corn basis, says Strine, took the biggest negative numbers.
Iowa corn basis remained the weakest market in the 5-state area. Northeast Iowa ended the period at negative 40 cents per bushel, 51 cents below its 3-year historical average. Iowa ethanol plant basis averaged negative 18 cents, 50 cents below its historical average. However, Iowa's movement was among the most stable. 6 of Iowa's 9 districts had modest gains over the month. As other markets fell and Iowa held steady, the gap between Iowa and the rest of the region narrowed heading into September.
Soybean basis saw some stronger numbers.
Turning to soybeans, basis in 17 crop reporting districts strengthened in 23 weekend. The largest move came out of Iowa. West Central and Southwest Iowa each gained 24 cents per bushel, ending the period with cash prices above futures. Several Western Iowa districts recorded their highest basis level for this time of year in over a decade. The Iowa soybean processor market amplified this trend. Basis increased by 41 cents per bushel to positive 43 cents per bushel.
Soybean gains were more modest and scattered outside of Iowa.
Indiana and Ohio posted the strongest movements, with West Central Indiana gaining 8 cents and West Central Ohio gaining 10 cents. Michigan was the only state where every district declined, with losses ranging from 3 to 18 cents per bushel. The steepest decline came in South Central Ohio, down 20 cents, and Southwest Indiana, down 18 cents. The soybean basis map looks meaningfully different from July. The most dramatic shift was in the western Iowa, which moved into positive territory for the first time this crop year. Heading into September, the highest basis is concentrated in central Indiana.
Again, that was Josh Strine of Purdue University. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand, anytime you'd like to listen at willag.org. That's willag.org. Now up next, something just a little bit different than our usual weather segment, as Mark Russo is not available today. Illinois State climatologist Trent Ford continues to add up the tornadoes, he says, in 2026. And the numbers just keep climbing. 15 have occurred in August, pushing the state over the 200 mark, shattering the previous state record of 142. That was set in 2024. Trent Ford is in the process, of course, of putting together a 2026 timeline. The first outbreak, he says, occurred in February.
mid-February, we had a tornado outbreak, about 14 tornadoes that strewn across southeast Illinois from Effingham County over to the Indiana border. So, of course, you know, tornadoes in February aren't unforeseen, but they're not necessarily something we see common, especially tornado outbreaks.
Conditions did not line up in March.
March, we also had multiple tornado outbreaks. There was one along the I-70 corridor from roughly kind of the St. Louis Metro East area up to the Effingham area. We also had those really intense storms that moved across from LaSalle to Kankakee. I mentioned the hail that was dropped from some of those storms. So we had about 30 tornadoes or so in March, which is way above where we normally see. I mean, normally we're at, you know, a fraction of that for March.
And then Ford says things really escalated in April.
April was our really big month. We had about 70 tornadoes in April, multiple tornado outbreaks. Most of those were in central Illinois, including a lot in Logan County. I don't know, in Tazewell County. Those are the hot spots in April. And then a few in northern Illinois as well, including that EF2, the Lena tornado that was up there. That was a pretty intense event, especially.
There was a big contrast between May and June.
May was actually our off month. Normally, May is actually our most frequent. We only had one tornado in May. So everybody caught their breath and thought, oh, this is good. We're done with tornadoes. And then we had almost 90 in June. And that was strewn across the state, again, kind of hot spots in central and southeast Illinois, including an EF3 that spun up north of Peoria in the Washburn area and moved across and caused some damage in Dwight and Streeter.
And again, Trent Ford, the state climatologist in Illinois, says the July and August numbers also brought more tornadoes to Illinois.
And then July was fairly active. Now, again, normally we see tornadoes drop off between June and July, and then especially for the rest of the fall. We had about 10 tornadoes in July, several in the Chicagoland area, including a couple in the city of Chicago once again. And then, yeah, August has been active as well, but 15 to 18, I think we mentioned that, tornadoes this month, mostly in northern Illinois. We had one in Champaign County, one in Peoria County, but mostly in northern Illinois.
Illinois, by the way, is not considered to be in Tornado Alley, but in each of the last 4 years, the state has recorded over 100 tornadoes. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. A couple of items to keep in mind this week. If you live in Western Illinois or are really interested in beef cattle and their production, the Orr Beef Research Center Field Day is scheduled for Wednesday afternoon. You can find more at our website at willag.org. That's willag.org in the calendar of events. And the Farm Doc team will host the projected 2027 corn and soybean returns and update their 2026 budgets in a webinar that I'll host on Thursday morning at 11 a.m. Again, you can register through our calendar on the website, willag.org, or go to the Farm Doc Daily website and look under Webinars and Events. I'm Todd Gleason.